Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable, listening to Rick Ocasek and, of course, with the Cars and a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer who passed away over the weekend. He was found dead in his Manhattan apartment, 75 years old. And so we'll be playing his music this morning. And we will be talking about all kinds of things that happened over the weekend. And we welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the panel to you, and we'll get started. WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
And good morning, sir, to you.
Wonderful. We also welcome Albany Law School professor and director of the Immigration Law Clinic, Sarah Rogerson. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
Investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is in the house.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rosemary. And former associate editor of the Times Union newspaper, Mike Spain. Hello, sir.
Good morning.
Mike is filling in. Libby is out today. Mike is filling in. Well, thank you very much. We'll welcome you back tomorrow, Mike.
I'll be happy to be here again.
Very nice to have you on the show. Well, you know, I don't think it's ever good when you hear the terms locked and loaded, but the president has said that and basically said on Sunday that the United States was prepared to respond to the devastating attacks on two oil installations in Saudi Arabia that halved the state oil company's production output while Iran rejected U.S. accusations that it was responsible. Trump said in a tweet Sunday evening, "There is reason to believe that we know the culprit." He said the United States was locked and loaded depending on verification. Trump did not name Iran, as Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had on Saturday, or specify whether he was contemplating a military response. He said he was waiting to hear from the Saudis on who they believe was the cause of this attack and under what terms we would proceed. The administration was contemplating what U.S. officials characterized as a serious military response, though some in the Pentagon were saying and urging restraint. The officials spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss internal deliberations. The president did meet with the defense secretary, Mark Esper, on Sunday afternoon. Alan, what do you think?
Well, it's very dangerous, obviously. We do know that there's a potential for wagging the dog here, and that this president is so low in the polls that, and we know that he's a guy who does what he needs to do in order to get by, so, and to get ahead. So we have to worry about the political aspect of this. And then, of course, we have to worry about whether the Iranians did it. You know, that certainly is a possibility. And if they did, what the appropriate response would be to them. Would you have an all-out war? I don't think so, because then, you know, you're trying to get your troops out of Afghanistan right now because you know how unpopular that war is. Do you really want to go into a war with Iran? And so, you know, it to me, this is a very dangerous time.
Certainly feels that way, Rosemary.
It's times like this that made me wish that we had a Congress that was really doing its job, that could watch over this president. You're one day away from a big election in Israel, and so this war, allegation against Iran helps Netanyahu. I don't like that. I do not like relying on Saudi Arabia to figure out what happened, considering how they figured out the Khashoggi murder.
Very good point.
Isn't that true? And yeah. Trump has used to say cocked, but now locked and loaded way too often for my taste. Even if Iran did do this, the response, it's not full out war. And I think that that Trump does not have that kind of measured intelligence and dependence on diplomacy that is required in times like this. Very dangerous.
Well, let's assume that our intelligence reports are accurate, although the president himself has frequently faulted those reports. And it was Iran behind this drone attack on the Saudi oil fields. It shows that Iran is pushing the envelope. They know that John Bolton is out and that Trump, by kicking out John Bolton, signaled that he doesn't want to engage in a war, and they can push it a little bit farther, and they're going to force the issue. Meanwhile, next week, You have the UN General Assembly, and the head of Iran will be in New York. And there was speculation that Trump would meet with him, and that does seem to be dashed by this, which is too bad.
And it's a long time coming. I mean, a lot of this started under the Obama administration when Obama and Netanyahu came into office essentially together.
Yep.
And reporting has come out recently that under the Obama administration, we were dangerously close to Israel making a strike in Iran. So it's probably one of the most delicate situations to have this bull in a china shop operating within. And I think he's probably just being strategic, per usual, to maximize his own personal benefit from all these countries, mm-hmm. not Iran, but Israel and Saudi Arabia, certainly.
I was just going to say one thing, and then Mike, you said that it's off, the conversation between the two presidents is off for this reason. Well, remember, it was the Iranians who called off, who said they weren't going to meet with him, and I think it really wasn't our response to them. I just think we ought to make that clear.
Right. It was probably already not going to happen, but any chance of some kind of diplomacy seems to be completely gone now.
It's interesting to me that the efforts so far do not include A, talking to our allies, or B, going to the UN, which would be the usual place that a law-abiding nation would go to in a situation like this. The U.S. is acting again as a stalwart for Saudi Arabia. Why? The Houthis have claimed responsibility, and they're saying, no, the pictures show it comes from the north. Twice now they've claimed that they did it. Why not? That makes as much sense for the Houthis to be doing it as the Iranians. It's just all so suspicious that and I don't like this president, so it may be that it's my own biases that make me think he's acting in the wrong way, but it's so, well, it's just so off.
Well, the question is, it's a proxy war going on between the Houthis and Saudi Arabia, perhaps, but maybe this is really a proxy war between Iran and the U.S.
Well, the other question
that's interesting. That's true. The proxies have changed here.
I was going to ask about the Saudis and the kind of the default that seems to be happening with the Trump administration of, well, let's see what they say, let's see what they do, let's see. I mean, who else do we do that with under this administration?
Well, you have to remember, who was the first nation to invite the new President Trump to come and visit? And remember the the very warm welcome red carpet that rolled out in Saudi Arabia. I mean, it made a big impact on Trump, and he has stood behind him. He stood behind him through the whole Khashoggi thing, and it's clear that he's, you know, connected at the hip with Saudi Arabia.
But that should concern us, yes?
Yes.
Thank you, Sarah. Yes. Thank you.
Of course. You said it.
Yeah, I mean, joined at the hip. I mean, at every single international major high-profile summit or event, they're right next to each other. And didn't Trump recently walk into a room and ask for his favorite dictator? I mean,
he did. Is that really? Yeah. That's not an Onion story.
No, I think that's a real one. It's like he's not.
Well, he did blame energy-efficient light bulbs for making him look orange, so it is possible. But
I'm sorry. I missed that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he gave
me
a
too.
Speech. Yeah,
I knew there was the light bulb story. I didn't know that the reason behind the light bulb story was that the old
light
bulb.
No, he gave a speech, and I presume he was joking, but, you know, his jokes and reality are often close together, as Alan says. No joke is uttered completely in jest. But, yeah, he told him, people ask me why I went after the light bulbs. Well, those horrible light bulbs, they're just terrible. They give bad light. They always make me look orange. And he got a big laugh from it.
Well, all right. Could be self-deprecating.
Yeah,
I don't know if he does that well.
He doesn't do that often, so no. I appreciate some self-deprecating humor.
So, okay, let's assume for a second that there's going to be a response, either from the U.S. or from the Saudis. What would it be? In other words, would we knock out their oil fields? Would we drop a bomb on them? Do we know, by the way, whether they have a nuclear weapon? I suspect they do. There's a lot to be thinking about here.
Well, it really goes to the Pentagon and what the U.S. strategy is, too. I think the last time that tensions got this high, there were meetings at the Pentagon sort of a menu. This is what the United States could do.
Mm-hmm.
And telling all of the relevant parties involved – Do you want it done to you? And so that's what happened under the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. So I guess it depends on how much the president is willing to let the Pentagon do what the Pentagon has traditionally done in these situations.
I mean, it seems to be the military that's, well, I don't know about this new acting defense secretary because we don't know anything about him.
Who knows?
But it does seem the military that's been holding back because they know the potential for what can happen. It's already, the Middle East is already unbalanced, and it's just waiting to blow up, and this could more than do it.
Well, don't you think it's a good thing John Bolton isn't around to weigh in on this?
Absolutely, because he'd be riding the bomb.
So we agree with President Trump's decision to dump Bolton. That was a good thing.
Well, you know, he's the one who hired him. I can't forgive him for that.
Okay. I'm also thinking of what Sarah just said about the Pentagon. Remember, this is a president who is capable of, you know, reversing anything that any one of his subordinates says. So I don't know that that the people at the Pentagon are thinking that they could call the shots here. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, I guess I'm wondering what this is all stuff that we aren't privy to. What intelligence do they have? What capabilities do we have now? I guess 4 years later to 5 years later, because I guess they were talking about bunker busting targeted strikes, right? I mean, I'm sure President Trump is it's like the McDonald's menu of warfare. He's going to the Pentagon to say what's on the menu today? What could I do?
Value meal three.
Mm-hmm. You want to upsize that, sir?
So meanwhile, yes, last week I was reading an article, and it was all about how oil prices were, gas prices were low, and they were just going to go lower and lower and lower. And not to be a cynical journalist, but, and then this happens. Yeah. So oil prices jump. They go up, 10 to 15%. Some as 20%. And meanwhile, gas prices have already gone up in just the hours after this attack. To Alan, to your beginning when we started talking about Wag the Dog, the military action, yes, but obviously it is not helpful when you're talking about how great things are economically speaking when gas prices are high.
Yeah. The dog may be wagged not only by the president but by the petroleum companies, if I'm listening to what you're saying. And I think that's right. So in other words, you say, okay, we know that gas prices will go up because half of the Saudi output is going to be affected here. But then the question is, will it be going up disproportionately in favor of the petroleum companies?
You know, it reminds me of when there's a frost in Florida. Within an hour, I think orange juice prices spike. You know, does it really happen that quickly that the gasoline prices are already up?
No, the reports were that oil deliveries would continue as scheduled through at least today, and yet the prices have already gone up 20%, and they won't come down quickly either. So, yeah, this is another plus for Trump. He's helping his oil friends.
Then there's the impact on auto sales, which I know we're going to talk about it later on, but that impacts the...
Oh, with the strike.
The strike, yeah.
GM strike. So the attack on Saudi Arabia's oil infrastructure immediately knocked out 5.7 million barrels, or nearly 6% of the 100 million barrels the world consumes per day. A supply disruption on this scale is an extraordinary event, said an oil analyst with Raymond James. No single disruption on the scale has occurred in decades. U.S. oil prices have been trading in a belt between 50 and 60 a barrel in the past 6 months. Brent crude, the global benchmark, has been trading slightly above that range. Most oil companies and nations favor world prices in the $70 to $80 range, which allows a healthy profit without rattling the economy or sparking a rush for alternatives to petroleum. So you charge them enough, so you're still making a ton of money. You don't charge them too much, because that way then
they start looking for alternatives,
and you don't want that either. Then John Kilduff of, again, Capital said the Saudis are scrambling to make repairs to keep the oil flowing. The response will determine how high prices go and for how long. And that, of course, is the big question, and also what does it have on the, what impact does the jump in oil prices have on an already declining global economy, one that is already being impacted by the U.S. trade war with China and the sanctions that seem to be going.
Can't be good.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's all... It's hard to predict just exactly which factors will affect the economy and may mean a recession. A lot of economists are predicting there will be a recession. Of course, there will be a recession. It's all about when will there be a recession. Mm-hmm. And this could shift the timing.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue and have many more stories to talk about. We have to talk about the growing call for impeachment of Brett Kavanaugh, amongst other stories. The president tweeting this morning that the Justice Department should rescue Brett Kavanaugh. So we'll talk about what would be involved in a rescue mission for the Supreme Court
justice.
Do they use
drones for that? I don't know.
I don't know. But it makes gas prices go up 10% too. It's very odd. We'll be back, continue our conversation with Alan and Sarah and Mike and Rosemary after this short break.
Who's going to tell you things aren't so great?
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Mike Spain, and Rosemary Armeo joining us this morning. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Bob writes, I only read a dozen or so news sites a day, so maybe I missed the U.S. and Saudi Arabia signing a mutual defense pact. Maybe they joined NATO yesterday. I also don't remember another time when a U.S. president stated in public that he was waiting to be told by a foreign country and how to use our military. We certainly live in interesting times, which...
What an excellent
observation. That was
perfect.
Yeah.
Jim writes, would a limited attack on Iran help Netanyahu's election?
Yes. And any action against Iran helps Netanyahu, who's a very hardline anti-Iranian. His protection of Israel is central to his winning.
Vincent writes, bottom line is Donald Trump runs his administration like a business. If you're an underling and disagree with him or he personally does not like you, you are gone. It is obvious that this philosophy does not work out domestically nor on the world stage. Meanwhile, Ken writes and says, will sane heads in the NSA reflect just what a cornered Iran could do in retaliation for a U.S. attack? A cyber attack bringing down our electric grid? Great program as always. And that's from Ken.
That's funny because we were just talking on the break about how ineffective we felt on that last topic. It's so huge and important. And other than saying, wow, it's awful, we have to wait and see what happens, there's what do you say? I don't know.
All right.
I feel like we should have been deeper.
What did you want to say?
I don't have
Well, it shows a vulnerability. If it is the Houthi rebels or even Iran, who's kind of a nation that has a lot of constrictions around it, are able to carry off such an effective attack on the world oil supply, when you add cyber attacks to that and drone attacks, I mean, you know, it's a whole new ball game out there. And the big military powers are vulnerable to this kind of thing.
I think that's a great point, Mike. Really great point.
All right. So our next letter, and it brings us to a new topic, is does the panel think that Kavanaugh should be impeached? So this is calls for Kavanaugh's impeachment come amid new misconduct allegations. President Trump and other Republicans defended the Supreme Court justice after a New York Times essay described a previously unreported story about him as a student at Yale. Several Democratic presidential candidates called for the impeachment of Justice Brett Kavanaugh on Sunday after the New York Times published new information about allegations of sexual misconduct against him, while Republican leaders condemned the reporting as irresponsible and defended him. President Trump on Twitter accused news outlets of trying to pressure the justice into taking more liberal positions and suggested, without elaborating, that the Justice Department should come to his rescue. On Saturday, the Times published an essay in its opinion section adapted from a forthcoming book, The Education of Brett Kavanaugh, An Investigation, by two Times reporters, who helped cover his confirmation hearings. The reporters wrote that they spent 10 months investigating the allegations of sexual misconduct and assault at the center of the hearings, including one by former Yale classmate Deborah Ramirez. She recalled being at a dorm party where participants were drinking heavily and said that Mr. Kavanaugh had thrust his penis in her face, prompting her to swat it away and inadvertently touch it. While Senate investigators concluded at the time that Ms. Ramirez's account lacked corroboration, the author said at least seven people heard about the Yale incident long before Mr. Kavanaugh was a federal judge, including Ms. Ramirez's mother and two classmates who learned of it just days after the party. The book also reports that Ms. Ramirez's lawyers gave the FBI a list of 25 people, at least 25 people, who may have had corroborating evidence, but that the Bureau interviewed none of them. The two agents who interviewed Ms. Ramirez told her they found her credible, according to the excerpt.
So whose decision
the first thing.
Well, go ahead, Alan.
I'm sorry, Mike. pardon me. The first thing we've got to say here is this: that what he did as a college guy is terrible, but it's probably not the issue here. The issue is, did he lie under oath? And if he lied under oath, then that is really an impeachable offense. I think that's what this is going to come down to. Now, Mitch McConnell is not going to vote on this. He's not going to, because as I said earlier in the day, if in fact those guys in the Senate, the Republicans, have to vote one way or the other, they're going to lose a lot. And they would probably, it would probably go to defeating a number of them. So therefore, they can impeach him, all right. We know that, and basically a political indictment. But the idea that somehow, under the present circumstances, that Senate is going to get off its behind and vote for conviction, I think is absurd.
I think, unfortunately, it wasn't whether Kavanaugh was the subject of Kavanaugh's confirmation hearings wasn't whether or not he was telling the truth. He made it very clear that those confirmation hearings were about what liars all these women were. So we never really got to very many questions that got to his conduct and making him answer for his conduct. It was all about whether what his thoughts were about the women who were making the allegations against him, which was like the most horrific part of watching those confirmation hearings. That's why it was so hard for women in America to watch them, because we knew that he wasn't even, they weren't even getting him to put stuff on the record that we could, that anyone could use later against him.
You're right. But the question Joe has raised here is impeachment. Is this serious, that this is going to happen, that he could be removed from office? And I say no.
No. I agree.
Okay, so I want to talk about the media in this. You said that the most important issue is whether he lied. I think there's another issue that the book, if not the article, made clear, and that is that the FBI did a sham investigation. It was baloney that they were going to take a look at allegations. Deborah Ramirez was never taken seriously. She submitted a list, according to the reporters, who did what the FBI should have done and spent 10 months looking into this, 25 people who could have corroborated her, and they never spoke to a one of them, including even to Brett Kavanaugh directly about it. The New York Times made two errors in this story, which are ruinous. The press cannot make errors when they're reporting on Trump and his appointees. And in this case, they put out a tweet advertising the story that was just, oh my God, it was so ham-handed. It said something like, taking out your penis and pushing it into the hand of a girl at a party may seem like harmless fun, but, and then went on to say Kavanaugh did this. That's just ridiculous. So they end up apologizing for their tweet.
Wait. What's ridiculous?
To say that it's good, clean, may seem like good,
touting
clean
the
fun.
Story that way.
And touting the story
just
as
really,
well. And then
the second
thing they did is the book is accurate, and that should be forming the basis of what we do or don't do and think about Kavanaugh. In the excerpt, they called it an essay. What is an essay in a newspaper? I don't get that. They did a terrible job excerpting it, and they left out the important fact that a second woman not Deborah Ramirez, which is getting lost, a second woman who made similar allegations about him, did not recall the event and also denied it. She says, I don't think it happened. She refused to be interviewed. That's in the book, and it should have been in the story. It was not. And so the right now is having a field day. Rich Honan wrote a letter to me this morning saying, see? See? The left is out to,
now,
out to get him.
This other unnamed woman had previously reported that something had happened, similar to what happened to Ms. Ramirez, but then now has retracted.
One of the people who knew was another Yale co-ed of Alder, a friend of Alder's, Max Steyer, who runs a nonpartisan, non-NGO in Washington. However, the right press has connected him in the past with some legal dealings with Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton. So he's you know, that's part of the smear. And that's the story, that we're smearing Kavanaugh again instead of what we have never done, which I think is the main story. We are not vetting candidates for high office. And this is the highest and most important.
But that's the Senate. The Senate is the one who is indicted here by this essay or where the book that
the Senate
was taken
and
from.
Trump.
Well, Mitch McConnell. They have basically, or Grassley, who headed the Judiciary Committee process.
That's true.
Prevented these people from being able to step forward and get and get to make these allegations and have the allegations vetted.
What
I mean,
did you
so
say?
In a way, he protected Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh then doesn't admit anything or say anything. That's an impeachable offense.
But he wants to. He wants the Justice Department to rescue, quote, rescue Kavanaugh. And to Rosemary's point, you know, the FBI apparently may have been rescuing him already.
Yes.
Yeah, and
yes.
Really, that's not a thing, except to the extent.
Well, that's the. I mean, he's
that's
using
not a
him,
thing.
Well, meaning that Trump is like his guy, and he has to be protected.
Can the Justice Department do anything? What would rescuing Kavanaugh look like?
Well, what they did before was
stop the investigation,
limit the amount of information that was publicly available through the Senate. That there was a big fight in the Senate about
how
much.
So just do it again through an investigation?
Yeah. Another sham investigation.
This was an injustice, believe it or not, to Kavanaugh, because it didn't let him address allegations. And now he just is quiet.
I enjoy immensely that he will have a cloud over his head forever.
Oh, just like Clarence Thomas.
Just like Clarence Thomas,
25 years later, 30 years later, and he's still making decisions that are
affecting women.
Yes, affecting the U.S.
So I want to just go to, before we have to go to a break, but I want to go to what Rosemary, because there are some parts of this that I don't understand media-wise. So why was it in the opinion section? If the Times was going to excerpt, it could have been in the book review.
An
or
essay
in the book section.
In the opinion section.
They could have written a news story.
What is that? And also, if you're a reporter, why weren't you reporting that on the front page of the paper as opposed to waiting for a book?
Yeah, this was a book project. The two reporters covered the Kavanaugh hearing. And that's typical of newspapers, that after you've covered a big story, you go out and you work on a longer project on it. And then typically you do turn over major findings to your newspaper. And they did break the story when they had it. But it's correct in the book, and it was
incomplete.
It was just excerpted badly.
Yeah.
So is there a conflict of interest here, very quickly, Mike and Rosemary, that the Times is pushing its reporters' stuff?
No, I think they have a responsibility to report it. I agree with Rosemary that it didn't need to be an excerpt on the opinion page. It could have been a news story written from the book. And you know, they've had other reporters, many other reporters write many, many books over the years, and they report them and everybody else reports them, and they take the juicier items out and make them into news stories. I don't know why this was handled so differently.
And there's no information out, no statement from the Times yet. We should look at this on the Media Project sometime, Alan. It's
indeed
really strange.
Don't forget.
But what is their public editor or whatever their...
Well, they don't really have one anymore. They kind of got rid of that position.
It's Dean Baquet, their top guy who normally responds to things like this.
So they haven't done anything?
No. All they did was issue an apology for their stupid tweet.
All right, let's take a break and we'll continue. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
I guess you're just what I need.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning, the 16th of September. We have letters. We'll go to those and move on to other things. Christopher writes in and says, good morning. Bill Clinton, a Democrat, is a proven serial rapist. The alleged conduct of Kavanaugh is small potatoes. Sincerely, Chris.
Okay, so what? What does that mean?
I also disagree that it's small potatoes.
Yeah.
The conduct that all of it matters.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Well, I don't know. Was he ever proven to be a serial rapist either? That's not true either. But,
no.
Okay.
No, that's an opinion.
But let's give him that. Let's give him, say he was. Say he's worse than Kavanaugh. Okay, that's really bad. He shouldn't have been president. How does that affect our not wanting Kavanaugh to be on the Supreme Court if he is also?
Well, also, if we make the same assumption about the allegations raised against Kavanaugh, there were more.
We hear this two wrongs make a right argument all the time. It's nonsense, as you guys point out. It's ridiculous.
It shows the level of contempt with which most people, and men in particular, think of being the target of these types of attacks. And I guarantee you, if the same thing had happened to this gentleman, if he were in a learning environment, and a man had done that to him, there would be far different consequences. I mean, it's only recently that those types of that murder actually, as a response to that type of a same sex attack, in some states, it's still a defense to say, I was essentially afraid of that other man's body part. But when it happens to women, we don't care, and we just fight about the level to which. Was it really all that bad? And can we believe them?
And how often women lie. Yeah.
Matt writes, while we're all sickened by Kavanaugh's behavior, he's going nowhere. The Democrats do not have the courage of their convictions to impeach Trump, and they won't with Kavanaugh. The Senate will not convict in either case. Are the Dems trying to hand the election to Trump by relegating this and with Beto threatening to take people's guns away? Political malpractice writ large.
You know, that's a fascinating thing, that there are Democrats who will be for the impeachment of Kavanaugh, who are not for the impeachment of the president, and they think it's safer.
I just so dislike that argument that Democrats should not do X or Y, all right things, because it would help Trump get reelected. So what are we supposed to do for 4 years? Sit there and just sit quietly by while he violates norms and traditions that have built up over decades in this country? Mm. What is it that we are allowed to talk about that might help Trump? You know, if not the integrity of the Supreme Court justices, I can't imagine, or the validity of going to war.
I heard Chris Coons on the senator from Delaware.
Yep.
Chris Coons, who has been pushing for gun legislation, like background checks, saying that Beto O'Rourke has actually hurt the effort because he's going to be quoted, his quote saying that you're damn right, we're going to take away your AK-47s and your AR-15s. That's going to backfire on everybody, and they're not going to be able to get anything through. But I think Beto O'Rourke was a profile in courage. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's saying that we need to get these weapons out of the public.
Well, and all those things can be true. Right. And Chris Coons, actually, you'll remember, he still has a lot of credibility with the right, with the Republicans. He was at the center of a lot of, I believe, phone booth conversations about what are we going to do about the Kavanaugh situation. So Coons' role in the Senate is essentially to be that sort of moderate
go-between
Democrat who's sitting, let's be the voice of reason, whereas Beto's running his campaign, much like AOC did, on what is the heart of our party.
And this letter writer is more of a Nancy Pelosi, well, he deserves impeachment, but we can't do it because that could help him get reelected. Come on. Do your job.
Also, I heard a discussion on this last night, but if you impeach him, if you impeach Kavanaugh, well, Trump will name somebody else. It's possible.
If the House of Representatives were to vote articles of impeachment and it went to the Senate would never vote.
No,
on
it would never vote. But even if they did, then the president will pick somebody else.
And they'd fast track it.
He has a very good track record with the people he picks.
Well, but there's a question as to whether or not, in this case, as opposed to the presidential case, it would make a point about this guy's ineptitude and why he shouldn't be there. As opposed to because we know the Senate's not going to convict. But in this case, the impeachment process might be a good one.
All right. Here's a question. Why did Trump push Kavanaugh when this first came up? Why didn't he dump him then and name somebody worse and more doctrinaire?
Because he himself
Why?
Because he himself has been in that position again and again and again.
That's possible, or is it because there's $200,000 in debt for a Kavanaugh that suddenly disappeared? Who paid that debt, and what promise did they get in return? We do not know that.
I'm sorry, Rosemary.
$200,000 in debt.
Was $2,000. $200,000.
Kavanaugh was. And that debt disappeared. And it came up at the Senate hearing, but was never resolved. Who paid off his debt and why?
And for what?
So,
oil companies, you know, tobacco companies. Who knows? That's the sort of thing that an actual vetting process involving the FBI and the Senate really working would, that information should be out so we can judge it. Maybe
and
it's nothing.
Even without that vetting, the vote for his approval was so close. I think it was closest in more
ever.
Than a century.
Yeah.
We have this from Martin, who says, if the House votes to impeach, does the Senate have to have a trial and vote? I'm wondering if it's even optional.
You know, I should know that.
Judges are removed through impeachment. I mean, federal judges are. That's really the only remedy unless
they No.
No, but they're asking
the question
they have to
is this compulsory that there be a trial if they don't want one? In other words, if Mitch McConnell doesn't want to pass a bill, he doesn't bring it up, right?
If he doesn't want a hearing for a Supreme Court justice, doesn't do it. And he
that's
got away
right.
with it, right?
But I think because the Constitution assigns this duty to the Senate, they may be compelled to do it.
Right, but they could also put it off, and have it on November 15th, 2020.
Just like presidential impeachment.
Yeah.
John says, the Republican Party has sunk to the point where the best they have to offer us, a president and a Supreme Court justice, are serial sexual abusers. One of them is an inveterate liar. The other, someone who's clearly lied under oath and couldn't even get a majority of the full Senate to confirm him.
Point I just made.
Gene writes, we need answers. Why did Justice Kennedy retire so abruptly? What role did his son at Deutsche Bank play? Who paid off Brett Kavanaugh's $92,000 country club fees, plus his $200,000 credit card debt, plus his $1.2 million mortgage? Oh, I didn't know about the mortgage.
Yeah.
And purchased themselves a Supreme Court seat.
Yeah, these are all interesting questions, and you can see how conspiracy theories develop when this is left unanswered. We're supposed to be transparent, and that is why.
Brucey writes, Dr. Blasey Ford is still in hiding, if I'm not mistaken. Given that, I wonder why the student in the new allegation would decline to be interviewed. And additionally, why might she be disinclined to remember the incident? Beyond even the possibility that she herself might have been alcohol impaired at the time. But yeah, the New York Times screwed up.
Yeah, there may be very good reasons, but to not say that is unfair. That's exculpatory material that Kavanaugh was entitled to see in an article about himself.
No, but I really appreciate that point. I was trying to find time to get it in there. Is that, you know, Blasey Ford had to hire a private security company. She's relocated her family. The other day, I was wondering, you know, where is she and what is she doing? But I personally didn't want to add to the to her own. You know, it doesn't really matter to me.
Was she interviewed for the book? I mean, did she talk to the writers of the book after the hearings were over? I don't know.
Yeah, I have not read the book. I believe they did talk to her.
And Kavanaugh, it said in the story, declined to comment because they were negotiating the terms of how they would interview him for the book, and then he decided not to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably under advice of counsel.
Maybe he was rescued by the Justice Department.
And it gives him more time to
rode in on a Calvary horse.
maybe he didn't want to do it.
Right.
Period.
Yeah. Right, period. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have many other items to discuss, like an e-cig ban in New York State. And we'll also talk about the GM strike and other stuff as well. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
You might think I'm foolish, but maybe it's untrue.
Listening to Rick Ocasek this morning, the songwriter, rhythm guitarist, and lead singer for the Cars, who died over the weekend, 75 years old, and some great music that we've been playing this morning. All right, we have a lot of letters. We go to Keith, who says the Democrats are soft on crime and will not impeach. Whether a Supreme Court nominee committed perjury or the President of the United States was credibly accused of 10 instances of obstruction of justice by Robert Mueller, the Democrats will never take their oaths of office seriously to protect and defend the Constitution. Democrats like Antonio Delgado are soft on crime and are scared of Trump's base more than they are scared of the Democratic base. These people should be held to a higher standard, not this newly created low standard that the Dems are willing to tolerate. The Democrats should either impeach or get out. Hashtag sad.
Oh my God. I love it that it isn't the guy who commits the crime that we're blasting, but the Democrats who are failing to stop him from commit those crimes. That's
as opposed to the Republicans who put him in power.
Yeah, that's
talk
twisted.
About soft on crime.
Yeah.
All right, let's just pick the next Supreme Court justice from federal prisons.
Okay, yeah. Okay, letter writer, we just told you.
If there is a house-wide vote on impeachment, articles of impeachment before November, that will show where everybody stands. And I think that's what they need to do. Everybody has to weigh in. Knowing full well it will never go anywhere in the Senate, they should still step up and everybody should weigh in.
It gets a little bit complicated. And that is, and David Gustina raised it early this morning, 7:45, and that is that some of the blue dog Democrats, or the people in the middle, which is how they took the House of Representatives, the Democrats, don't want impeachment. They don't want to go forward because they think it will kill them with their own constituency. Now, you're right, Mike. It'll show where everybody is. And one of the things that I'm so worried about here is what this letter represents. People get frustrated when it doesn't go their way. And so they look for somebody to blame. And as the panel has already said, Danae, they're blaming, they're turning it on themselves. And that is a very dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm. And what do we do about that? I mean, is it up to candidates? Is it up to, who is it up to kind of right that ship?
Well, that's a tough one because... if Nancy Pelosi doesn't go along with the majority of her conference now, it's going to look like she's weak. And who knows whether she puts some of these middle-range Democrats up to complaining about this because, it strengthens her hand. I think technically from a political science point of view, a politics point of view, she's right. It's a mistake. But from the passion that people feel about Trump and how they hate him and all the rest of it, I don't think she can stop the ship.
Pelosi's smarter than that. She's also behind and has fully supported the Judiciary Committee and its inquiries and its the legal actions they're taking. So she can easily switch at any time, saying, "Look at the information we found in this probe." That what are they calling it now? An impeachment investigatory inquiry. So she can easily use that and go to impeachment.
Well, to be fair, I think the inquiry thing is a great way of protecting herself
Correct.
And the other Democrats.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And if it is compelling, if the evidence is compelling, what would the right timing be for a House impeachment vote where everybody has to go on the record on where they stand? Hmm. Would it be like summertime, June, maybe September of 2020?
When would be October 2020?
October. October surprise.
High drama.
Well, except that if Pelosi's right and the moderate Democrats who are coming to her are correct in what they are asking for, then to have an impeachment vote at all might endanger the continuance of dominance in the House of Representatives by the Democrats.
Mm. Well, certainly that is the fine line that she has to walk. And if she is so astute, she'll make the right decision.
Well, that's an easy way out, Mike.
What would you advise her to do, Alan? If she said, Alan, I need some help with this, what would you tell her?
Well, I would tell her, but I'm not going to tell you.
That's an easy way out, Alan.
Because people will just hate me. That's why. No, I think she's right in all of this. She won the House of Representatives, which made her a spectacular success for a woman who many people thought wasn't going to do well. She's done extraordinarily well. She wants to keep the House. It's that simple. And she knows that if they go forward with an impeachment vote, it's going to cost some of her people their seats. So what would you do? I mean, you know, my advice to her is, my secret advice to her, because I don't want anybody knowing it. My secret advice to her is, keep doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And now we know.
No, you don't. I didn't say it out loud. Backs, backs, no backs.
Page two.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about what happened over the weekend with the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo. Amid a surge of vaping-related illnesses and deaths, the governor announced on Sunday that he would pursue emergency regulations this week to quickly ban the sale of flavored e-cigarettes. The governor's action comes days after the president announced an effort to ban similar vaping products at the federal level. If New York does outlaw flavored e-cigarettes, it would become the second state to move towards such a ban, following Michigan, which announced earlier this month that it would prohibit such products. Speaking in Midtown Manhattan, Mr. Cuomo described a growing health crisis, likening it to illnesses related to traditional tobacco products. There have been, under the plan obtained by Mr. Cuomo on Sunday, the state's public health and Health Planning Council, a little-known regulatory body, would be convened by the health commissioner. The council would then issue an emergency regulation to ban the sale of flavored e-cigarettes, rules that would take effect immediately. New York State has had 64 cases of lung disease linked to vaping, according to the health department, saying that they need to tackle this as fast as possible. We do not need to repeat history. Still, the decision not to immediately include menthol drew a sharp rebuke from the American Lung Association, which said Mr. Cuomo had missed the opportunity to take decisive action. I believe both the mint products, the menthol products, were not included in this. And
yeah, because the others go after the kids. And we learned something from the governor that his favorite candy was Captain Crunch.
Cereal, yes.
Cereal's Captain Crunch, and there's one of these brands.
There was some suggestion that menthol has been effective in cigarette smokers backing off the number of cigarettes that they smoke, mm-hmm. and that was cited. But I wonder if it's because menthol has been around so long, it might generate some kind of lawsuit from the tobacco cigarette makers. You know, I don't know.
I think it's really good he did this. I'm happy he did as a parent and as a grandparent. I think this was the fundamental government, which is to protect your citizens. And I also, he has none of the hypocrisy in this action that Trump faces, because he actually acted on guns, too.
Right.
So, bravo.
Mike, you've been around for a while, not as long as I have, but you've been around. And you may remember David Axelrod.
Of course, the great health commissioner.
Sainted best health commissioner the state has ever had. Used that commission, I believe, that health commission. Wanted to use it to ban smoking altogether, as I remember it, or something like that. But it didn't wash. So do you remember that at all?
Oh, no, I do. The whole argument about, control of cigarettes and what laws are going to be effective, it's interesting. They let vaping sort of sneak in quickly. Vaping took over like crazy. And now I think Cuomo and others in the public sector see this as an opportunity to clamp down on vaping like they should have when it first became widely available, because it's been proven to be a pathway for young people. Cigarette smoking among teenagers was at an all-time low. It's now rising. And now what are teenagers going to do, when young people who have been smoking e-cigarettes going to do now when they're not available? They're going to probably turn to regular cigarettes, and won't the tobacco companies love that? I mean, it's a pathway, It certainly can be a way for people who are heavy cigarette smokers to back off, and they tout that. The Juul and the other companies tout that, but they're going after kids with these flavors. And, you know, it's been said people don't start smoking at age 40. They start smoking and get addicted when their brains can become very, very easily addicted to nicotine when they're teenagers. And these flavors, Captain Crunch, as you mentioned, and
Swedish Fish, you know, pink lemonade.
Right, all these things are very attractive.
Aren't there two issues mixed, though? Because a lot of the lung death is connected to vaping pot, and that's not a kid's flavor. So is that banned? Are all those stores, like in Massachusetts, now selling pot, and there are vaping equipment
selling
is
vaping
available?
Equipment, yeah.
Will that end, too?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's muddy, and they're using the problems – Perhaps, not proven, associated strictly with the THC vaping to go after all of vaping. And, you know, frankly, if that's the case, I still think they should be going after vaping. So I think it's okay.
Yeah.
I was amazed, though. I still don't completely understand vaping because some of it produces a plume of, like, vapor. And others is just you don't see anything. It's very silent and does not have a lot of odor attached to it. When Hamilton was in town, I went to go see the play with my niece, and there were two guys in front of us vaping.
During the show.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, they do it on planes, and I just don't know how you stop. Yeah.
Today, the Daily Gazette reported that Niskayuna High School will be installing vaping detectors in some of their bathrooms, and that's what we're getting to. You know, they can at least make a statement and hold some kids accountable for sneaking it in during school.
I have a statement. It's a disgusting habit.
Well, yeah.
It's gross.
Yeah. It is gross, but I mean, and again, I don't know why. Yeah, I mean, cigarettes are bad enough. I don't smoke, but I never have. But I don't know why anybody would want to even like smoke Swedish Fish. Like, right. I don't get that. You know, like I don't. Well, like eat Swedish Fish. Oh, okay, maybe, but
Captain Crunch, perhaps.
But to inhale Swedish Fish seems odd to me.
Well, do you think that there's a possibility here that going after the vapors is easier than going after the tobacco company?
Oh, you betcha.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. Yes.
So from a political point of view, it's a winner.
Well, I mean, what, seven people have died in these vaping-related things in the last year?
Sure.
How many people died of complications of cigarette smoking?
Sure.
Thousands. And you know, maybe this is the beginning of a retrenchment back towards, you know, trying to reduce smoking.
20,000 vape shops nationwide, a $2.6 billion industry.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that is stunning.
And they portray it as something that's good. And Juul would take out all these full-page ads in newspapers saying, well, you know, this should be a path to getting, off of cigarettes.
Off yourself away,
when it is a path for kids to go right on to tobacco addiction.
Well, I never got shisha smoking either, which is huge. I was in the Middle East, so it's everywhere. I mean, women in veils are smoking shisha, and it's all over the U.S. now.
Tell us what shisha is.
Yes. Thank you, Mike.
It's the nagila, you know, the it looks like a bong, we used to call it.
Tube.
And you smoke flavored
hookah.
Shisha it's called, usually now.
Okay.
And you smoke flavored tobacco in it. And that is also hugely popular. People say, oh, no, I don't smoke. Do you do shisha? Oh, yeah, all the time. What?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with cultural signaling, right? And maybe we're just not consuming the same type of media that folks who enjoy this are.
Well, the other point I heard, this is actually from a kid's perspective, which I thought was interesting, that the positives of vaping is that they're really, other than the vials that you will put in, it's not like I'm a pack a day smoker because there is no real quantification. It's just whenever you want, it can go on.
Denial.
There is no measurement. Right. It's just like the never ending glass that just keeps filling and filling and filling. So it's you don't have this. Yeah, I'm up to three packs a day because you can't really quantify it in any way. All right. Last but certainly not least, GM on strike, and this was just overnight. 50,000 union workers walk out over wages and idled plants. They went on strike at midnight at factories across the Midwest and South to picket lines Monday morning. With the two sides far apart, UAW regional leaders in Detroit voted unanimously on Sunday morning to authorize the strike, the union's first such walkout since 2007. It began at midnight after the union's current bargaining agreement expired on Saturday.
Well, it's a step forward by unions. I think this is an important time, and economists and historians will look at this as, and how this turns out as a significant step in the power of unions. It's been declining. The number of people in labor unions has gone down in the last two decades significantly. And, you know, the auto workers gave up a lot to prevent the bankruptcy of the big three, automakers. And then it's only reasonable that they're trying to get back, especially since General Motors made $8 billion worldwide last year.
Exactly.
Now, in GM's defense, you know, they're really entrenching. I mean, the economy is in a slump and car sales are down. People are not
buying these
little sedans anymore. They're buying SUVs. Of course, now with the oil prices, maybe not so much.
Right.
And so it's a really crucial time, and it will define how this turns out will define the future of the auto industry and the future of labor union strength across the country.
The American auto industry.
I mean, right.
Because an awful lot of people in this country have bought and will continue, even though the tariffs and everything, to buy foreign cars, whether it's correct or not, in the belief that they're better.
Well, and even American companies, yeah, though, are importing parts from abroad.
Right.
So American vehicle really doesn't mean anything.
That's a hard argument too, Alan, because I have a Honda that was made in Ohio. I mean, or a Subaru made in Indiana, you know.
But Mr. Subaru and Mr. Honda get the money. And there is a Mr. Toyota, which is always interesting to me. So anyway, but then I was interested in the president taking a ho-hum approach to this whole thing. Basically, ho-hum, here they all go again. He didn't do what one might have expected from this particular guy, which is to side with the auto companies. And I suspect that's because a lot of middle and lower middle class Americans voted for Donald Trump.
Correct.
And I think he's worried that if they're in the union and if it's their money, that might be the turning point that would turn them away from
him. I think that's absolutely right. And we're talking about Michigan, which is a newly swinging state for this next election. And
was a car song.
Soon to be swinging.
I grew up in Michigan, and most of my extended family are still back in Michigan. And my grandfather worked for GM, and I have an uncle who worked for the steel mills. So our family was deeply impacted back in 2008 to 2010. And so there's a lot of political capital at stake, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the politics in Michigan.
That is true. And the political capital has also been expended by Trump. And the auto workers are calling for some of the same things he are, keeping the plant in Lordstown open, for example. That's Trump called for that. So why is he not siding with the auto workers? And the answer, of course, is
because
he's
a big
corporatist.
And he hasn't his whole presidency.
Exactly.
None of the plants that he promised
materialized. But he does want some of the same things they want.
He does. It's odd. It's very odd.
And keeping a plant open when it's not making something that is currently selling, it means converting it to making electric cars or something like that. I mean, there should be incentives.
And GM, by the way, offered to do that. They were going to turn Lordstown into a battery plant because they're switching to electric cars.
They still are talking that, aren't they?
Yeah. As I said this on the break, I do not understand the strike. If it's to boost unions, great. I'm all for unions. But why is this a reason to go on strike for the first time since 2007? It seems like
We're out of time, but go ahead.
I'll tell you really quickly, it's all about leadership. The leaders of these unions get elected by being substantially aggressive.
We have to go. Goodbye.